Murray is an in form at the moment, lads, and there's no getting away from that. Like,
it's a big call, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of chat about Casey. I thought he played well at the.
Do you start him ahead of Murray though?
I'm not sure. Like, Conor Murray's got a lot of money in the bank over the years. Like, probably literally, actually.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome back to House of Rugby, URC. Another cracking show for you this week, guys, with plenty of URC action to look back on, including a very interesting affair down in the Kingspan. As always, I'm joined by my good friend, the second best rugby presenter to ever come out of Limerick, Mr. Greg O'Shea.
It's good to be back, man. It feels like ages since we've been on.
Yeah, it does. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
I missed you too. Yeah. But look who else is here. Look what the cat dragged in. Look who's back.
I agreed.
Darren Cave.
I agreed to come on the show at half time in Toulouse away. And then, like, you know, 6 days later, Ulster shambles and I couldn't get out of it. So that's the reason I'm here.
You look great, though. Good to see the stash is back.
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah. It's still hanging in there. It's 2 years. I know it looks dreadful, but I don't know. I get a lot of aggro, but it's kind of like, it's a midlife crisis.
No, I love it, man.
But like that Ron Burgundy impersonation, that pays the bills. Like, I mean, you must be getting gigs all over the country doing that, do you?
It does, yeah.
You'll probably have spotted as well that Nathan Doak isn't here. We mentioned during the week that he would be on the show this week. But unfortunately, Nathan isn't well. And we wish him the best of luck and hope to have him on later on in the series.
Well, he managed to get out of it after the result at the weekend. He was like, yeah, no worries. I'll come on Sunday. Talk about dishing up Munster. Nah.
afraid of 2 months of lads and what we're going to say and what we're going to do to him.
Exactly.
It's going to be 2v2. Now we're just going to bully down.
That's pretty much going to be it for the next 40 minutes. Like, but yeah. Continuing with the bullying, let's get straight into it. You were at the game on Friday. You were working for pals in RTE. Good result, wasn't it?
I was on RTE, yes. It was a dreadful result. I was like, genuinely, I thought... it is so hard to compete in both competitions. And I did think in the group at Ulster, they would be thinking, well, do you know what? You know, Munster now distracted by the Champions Cup. Leinster distracted by Champions Cup. Like, this is a huge opportunity. And I thought, I didn't even think Munster played that well. I just thought they were really professional. Didn't really do a lot wrong. And I think Ulster just kind of beat themselves, you know? So it was really disappointing from an Ulster point of view.
Yeah, great for Munster, though. We've leapfrogged Munster. Ulster now in the third place in the URC. Yeah. Ulster gone down to fifth, which is great.
But it must be frustrating for Ulster, because I remember listening to Stephen Ferris talk about it on Premier Sports as well. And this seems to happen a lot with Ulster, where you have a cracking, like, first three quarters of the season. Ulster looked unbelievable this year. And all of a sudden, as you said, the space is 6 days now. It's looking like it's all falling apart again.
Yeah, genuinely, you know, after beating Toulouse away, people in Ulster were going, right, well, if we end up home to Munster, like, we've got a real good shot of getting a semi-final, and then you're second in the league, and you're kind of thinking, right, that's you home in the quarters and semis if you get it, then you're, obviously, you get a little ahead of yourself. And yeah, bang, and it's all changed, and home advantage in these playoffs in the URC is going to be huge. So where everyone finishes is going to be really, really important. Yeah. We found out the other day that whoever tops the table is going to get a home final if they get that far, which is likely to be our mates in Dublin. Yeah. But it makes a big difference. Like, if Ulster end up, like, they've got to go to Edinburgh now, who are right in the middle of this. You know, if they end up getting through in fifth or sixth, you could end up, you know, down away at the Stormers in the quarterfinals. It's a big, big difference. Yeah. From a Munster point of view, like, I say fair play to them. Like, they're just, like, I said on TV on Friday, I just feel like Ulster lose games they should win and Munster the opposite. Like, Munster just get it done. And I think I have been quite critical of Munster's attack and the Stephen Larkham impact on them. But again, I looked at the weekend, they've scored, like, I think it's 55 tries, now 56, 57 in the league, which is second only to Leinster. Before that game, they'd scored 15 tries more than Ulster, which is the same gap as there has been Ulster and Benetton. You know, so, like, Munster, I don't know, they're doing something right, but they're in a really, really good place, I thought. More so up front, really interesting to see some of those younger guys come through.
Guys like Kendall and stuff coming in, like, yeah.
He was brilliant. Ahern ended up on the bench. I think he was sick, but I'm not sure what happened. Just loads of young guys, even like Jack O'Donoghue. You know, he's not young, but it's sort of from a captaincy point of view. So from a Munster point of view, I think it's like it's really exciting for them.
Yeah. What do you think it is, Greg? I mean, you were, well, both of us were pretty critical of Munster there 2 weeks ago, like, and we were off for the last couple of weeks, and now we're coming back, and they've just beaten Exeter pretty comfortably, and emphatically in Thomond Park. Now they're after beating Ulster away. I mean, is it down to the fact that Rowntree is now in place? Yeah. And maybe he's doing a bit more behind the scenes, do you think?
We were quite critical of him against Leinster when Leinster came down and beat us in Thomond Park. But I just thought the decision-making on that day was really poor. But I did say in that show, I was like, I think Munster can beat Exeter at home. Mm. And they went out and did it in the second fixture, and they won on aggregate, and they played really well. Mm. But it came down to the basics, I feel, which sounds really cliche, but like, Joey Carberry kicked all his kicks against Exeter, which was really good. He kicked unbelievably against Ulster as well. Yeah. Just ticking up those 3 points is massive. Like, we just stay in the fight. And then against Ulster, they just took their opportunities. They had that one phase play where they went out the back and Chris Farrell went through and put Keith Earls away.
Yeah.
Just taking their opportunities, which is great to see. I think that's why Munster have scored so many tries this year. When they get their opportunities, they take them. Even though it could be argued it's not as entertaining as Ulster tries or Connacht tries or Leinster tries. But to say Munster get it done, like, their four pack always just maul over, get a try. Stephen Archer with a try. Like, it's not exciting, but it works.
Yeah.
I just feel like Munster are really good at letting the opposition just beat themselves. Yeah. Like, just go out. And like, I thought in defence, like, they just looked really organised. I thought they made Ulster's attack. I did think Ulster's attack was poor, but I thought they made it look really poor. They just were so organised, really, like, really connected. There was no, like, and it just looked like, I felt like when Ulster had the ball, Munster looked very, very relaxed. And it was only at the end when Ulster got a bit of traction through the maul and the yellow card and a bit of pressure came that Ulster actually get any traction in the game. And you mentioned Carberry. I think it's great. I've always kind of felt from an Irish point of view that he is the guy. He is going to be the guy with Johnny. I don't know why. I've said before, I always have this in my head, that Gloucester performance from like 3 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that game. Man.
And I just struggle to forget how well Joey Carberry played that day. And I remember, and I still think, going back to that last World Cup, you know, if he had a shocking season, injuries, he was nothing like where he could be. And I just think if Ireland are going to go and compete at a World Cup, he's the guy that is going to push Johnny or step in if Johnny gets injured. Or so I think from an Irish point of view and a Munster point of view, it's really good to see him. I didn't think he was like, he did anything spectacular. He just controlled the game really well.
That's what I think he's doing really well as he's getting a bit older. He's like, he's much more controlled. You're not noticing him in games as much, which is a good thing, which means he's doing his job as a 10. He's distributing. He took that try lovely against Exeter, showed his agility. But I just think his kicking, he's just kicking it from all over the pitch.
I think he's linking up really well as well. And you might not like this. He's linked up really well this week and in the second half last week with Craig Casey.
Yeah.
I don't think Murray was great in that first half against Exeter. And you saw the weekend with Casey starting, like, he really did make a difference. And is he perhaps, like, I mean, I think he could land to that 9 jersey come to Toulouse game.
Do you think?
I think he could, like, the way he's playing at the moment. He's hitting form at the right time. And
wow.
Murray isn't in form at the moment, lads. And there's no getting away from that. Like,
it's a big call, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of chat about Casey. I thought he played well at the...
Do you start him ahead of Murray, though?
I'm not sure. Like, Conor Murray's got a lot of money in the bank over the years. Like, probably literally, actually. But I meant in terms of experience.
Yeah, he's starting, man.
I think he's probably...
Oh, you love Murray, will you stop?
I think Murray's probably likely to start. But again, like, Casey, he looks a really, really, really good player. Yeah, probably played well the weekend.
The thing with Casey is he has a noticeable impact when he comes off the bench. Like, he's just... The speed of the game, like, Murray doesn't really have that extra speed that Casey brings on, so I think Murray's going to start. But it's not about who's starting against Toulouse. We have to talk about the actual Ulster game.
I thought we were done talking about it.
No, we're not. We haven't even got into it, man. Alex Kendallin, lads, what a player. Like, how good is he?
He's just coming out of nowhere, lads. I mean, he got a couple of games over in South Africa, and then, like, he really impressed. I know we lost and got battered, but he really impressed in that Leinster game off the bench when Coombs got injured early on. And he looks like a serious talent.
He got man of the match this week. And, like, he's not, like, he's a big lad, but he's not that big a lad when it comes to back rowers. He just puts his weight around, tackles, the efforts he's putting in. He's incredible. Like, and same with Jack O'Donoghue, who had a really good game again.
I thought Kendallin, there was one time, I actually think it ended up being an Ulster penalty, but he fielded the ball in the backfield for Munster and he ran it back. And I was like looking, because I was at pitch side and I was like, who's that? You know, because he looked so like, just looked real. I was like, what position is this guy? Because he's huge, but he's moving with such agility and he took the ball. I think he looks really, and again, like I said, like, okay, there's a couple of older heads still in that pack, but I think, is he like, what is he, like 20?
20, he was the Irish, he was the 20s captain there, was it last year?
He's 21, so like, loads to be excited about. I think he looks really good player.
Yeah, do you think the Ulster, do you think it comes down a small bit to their, to a bit of a hangover from the Toulouse game? Because they were, they played 160 minutes of rugby and lost to Toulouse with a try in the last minute and lose two legs overall by 1 point.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking.
That is, you couldn't pick a worse way to lose it.
I watched the highlights again today. I was like, oh, imagine being an Ulster man watching that.
And like, the red card and stuff at the end. Like, I think that was, that's in the players' head all week, the players' heads all week. Like,
I mean, yes, and no, I thought we were going to get a huge reaction. I thought Ulster were going to beat Munster, not comfortably, but I didn't foresee the game going like that. I just felt like Ulster would have been, as I said, used it as a positive. I spoke about it a little on TV at the weekend. I think they really, really lack a second number 10 in terms of controlling the game. The Toulouse game, like Tom O'Toole got red carded, but Billy Burns went off a concussion at a very similar time. And I just feel like for 3 or 4 years, Ulster have, like, you know, maybe chucked John Cooney in. In South Africa, Nathan Doak ended up at 10 for a bit.
Why aren't they playing Ian Madigan?
Yeah, well, I was about to say, what's going on there?
Even if you look back, like Bill Johnson was there, Johnny McPhillips was there, they just haven't settled on like a backup 10. Like when Billy Burns is not playing, and Billy Burns comes in for a bit of criticism, which I actually think is unfair. I think what he does for kind of what you said about Joey, it's not always the scene stuff.
Yeah.
And if you look at how that Ulster team, a lot of those outside backs are excelling, there's no real acknowledgement for the fact, well, who's given it to them in space? And people say, oh, he plays deep and he shifts it and he doesn't play at the line. And it's, but like, look at Rob Balakin, look at James Hume, look at Mike Lowry from fullback. They're carving it. And I just don't think that Michael Lowry is as naturally, I know he played 10 in school, in there for Ulster in terms of managing a team around the pitch and exiting well, and maybe you have 14 players, so you need to mix up your attack, start using short side, start kicking in behind, all that kind of stuff. And he hasn't played there.
Yeah, he's so not I think, in. Like,
yeah, to go like 20 minutes left and that moment to lose your 10 in Toulouse and to chuck a guy in there who's like, I think I heard he started like 4 or 5 games at 10 for Ulster ever. And then to go into the Munster game, the next biggest game of the season, and, you know, you've signed Ian Madigan. He's probably getting paid a few quid.
Yes.
And
you haven't used him. International 10. This guy's proven himself.
He hasn't played at Ulster really at all since he's been there. I think that whole dynamic, I think that's something Ulster have got wrong.
Is it an injury thing at Madigan, or is it just not getting picked for the starting position?
He came off the bench the weekend, and he made a noticeable difference when he came on. So I think it loose, behind the scenes.
That loose game, I do think suits him quite a lot, but I don't think he has been injured a lot at Ulster for whatever reason. He just hasn't played a lot. I think it's strange as well.
Before he left, before he went, I can't remember where he went playing.
He went to Bristol. He went to Bordeaux first. Then he went to Bristol. Yeah.
He was the second choice 10 behind Johnny for years, and he was classic. I just don't see why Ulster don't use him. Put Lowry at 15.
Yeah.
Who started 15? Stuart Moore, was it?
Stuart Moore, which again was a bit of a risk. He'd had a great game there against like a Cardiff third team a couple of months ago, but he's not a fullback, he's a centre.
Yeah.
I would have been thinking, you know, Lowry at fullback and somebody, but even then, like, Madigan hasn't played. It's just how Ulster have got to the business end of the season, and Billy Burns could be out for 2 or 3 weeks or more with a concussion. And it's like, well, who, you know, Mikey Lowry twice in a row now hasn't done the job. So what are you doing next week?
Listen, you're away to Edinburgh.
You're trying somebody else.
You have to start Madigan away to Edinburgh in that situation. You can't throw Lowry in there again or someone else. It doesn't make any sense because they're two must-win games, as you said now. Like,
well, I thought on paper as well, the two backlines going up against each other, you're going against an international Munster backline. Like, you've Chris Farrell, you've Delanda, you've Joey, you've Shane Daly, who's an Irish cap, you've Keith Earls. Unbelievable Irish backline there.
Casey
going
as
up
well.
Against Casey, and then just a mixture bag of Ulster. Just weird selection, I thought.
Yeah, I wouldn't have agreed with it now. And credit, I think, to Chris Farrell, actually, because he's probably had a sort of, like, wasn't that long ago he was in that one Irish centre who was trying to break into the three kind of top dogs, whatever you want to call them. And he was at the World Cup. Yeah. And the last sort of 6 months, like, James Hume has come from nowhere. And the gap, like, James Hume's probably closer to the top three than Chris Farrell is to him. And I think he would have enjoyed the weekend. He played well. And
he had a good game,
That play for the Earl's try was just like, it's just really, really top drawer centre play. Yeah. So I think that's
Sure, he got a bit of pace for it as well for Big Lad, didn't he?
Chris Farrell. He is. Listen, that's the thing about him. And I remember when he was at Ulster, he's He's a lovely passer. That actually wasn't his best ball off the left, but
Earlsy
lost a hamstring as he scooped it off his bootlaces. Yeah. But
I think it's 61 tries for Earlsy, is there 67?
Something like that, yeah.
Most tries ever.
It annoys me so much when people try and write off Keith Earls, and they were trying to write him off there again after the Six Nations, saying, oh, he's finished. And a lot of Munster players, Limerick people are writing him off. I mean, if it wasn't for that tackle in the first leg against Exeter, I don't think Munster would be in the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup. I really don't, because it was that important, and how well he played in the second leg and how well he played there. Yeah. Keith Earls ain't finished yet.
Not at all.
You know, I sometimes wonder, am I a little biased because I was the same age grade as him? So I've known him for mid-30s. Probably known the guy half my life, and he's just such a nice guy. Yeah. But there's actually not many players that I can think of who, Rob Carney's probably another one, who's consistently had to reprove himself.
Yeah.
Like I felt like the whole way through Earls' career, I meet people and they're like, yeah, I don't rate Keith Earls. And I'm like, honestly, this guy, like...
one of the best players for the last 10 years.
Honestly, there'll be people listening to this podcast going, I don't rate Keith Earls, Darren Kidd's full of it. I'm telling you, I've played with him, trained with him, against him. He's an unbelievable rugby player. He is electric and still aged. I'm 30, he's 34. He's so quick. He's so intelligent. He's physical. Like, he can kick the ball. He can get up in the air. Yeah. He's a really good leader. I think he's a brilliant player. And I just think... he gets a lot of shit, doesn't he?
He does. Mm. I think he's one of those players that you won't appreciate how good he was until he retired. You look back and you'll go, he's loved in Limerick.
He's loved in Munster. It's outside. People just don't rate him. When he's in the Irish setup, people don't think he should be there. But I'm like, he's incredible. I was in the academy for 4 years at Munster, and I learned so much off him. He'd bring me to the side, teach me agility drills, little things that I was like, oh, great, try this. Like, it's such a nice guy, always so welcoming. And how fast he was at his age, he was like fastest than everyone else. And no one really knows that about him, I think.
But anytime you hear someone, like you just said it there when you were in the Irish camp and stuff with him. I remember hearing that Brian O'Driscoll speaking about him, Sexton, O'Gara, anyone that's played in training, they're like, who is the best player you train with? Who's the best player you've been alongside in the camp? Like, Keith Earls. Every time the answer is Keith Earls. Yeah. That's how good he was. He's so rated by his
colleagues.
But if
you're in the pub after, Joe Bloggs, from Taran Urie's at 12 pints, he's scrap.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's just unbelievable guy. We can talk about them for ages.
Two other bits of big news for Munster while we were away. So the head coach situation is sorted out. Graham Rowntree is taking over. I don't know if they had done lots of interviews or if they couldn't get their man and decided to bring Rowntree in, or maybe he was the outstanding candidate. But personally, as a Munster fan, I think it's a good appointment. I don't know, Greg, what do you think?
I think it's good. It keeps a bit of consistency in the coaching setup. They all know him. Like, obviously, he's gets on with the lads well. He seems to do all right. But this is his first proper head coach.
This is his first, yeah. But he does have, he's coached with England. He's coached with the Lions. He's coached with, was it Georgia? He coached with as well at the World Cup.
He does have, it's just strange ridiculous that he has such a long CV of assistant jobs.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
it seems that it's strange. It hasn't maybe come early for him, but it does seem like a, I heard him, I think it was an interview with him chatting about Limerick. He sounds like he loves it down there.
He bought a house there and everything. He bought a house there a couple of years ago. I said on the show, he actually bought CJ Stander's house when CJ Stander left out in Castleconnell. So he's
loaded as well.
So he's a few quid there as well. But that's why I think everyone knew he was going to stay when everything was up in the air, because he bought a house. But he said himself that he wants to bring in, and he's already been speaking to coaches for the last few months as part of his backroom team, that are going to be very similar to him. So he, to me, comes across as very old-fashioned style, old stock. So who's he going to go for?
His background at Leicester, I think he really, Leicester and Munster, I think, are two clubs that there are a lot of similarities in, I know Munster's not a town, but the idea
it's
that,
fan base,
you know, the people, the way they play, the sort of values of the clubs, I could see, and they're real rugby places, I could see a lot of similarities. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see who he appoints, because obviously, being a prop, there are going to be certain parts of the game that he just doesn't have. It would be unfair to say he doesn't have a clue about, but he's going to need help. And again, really interesting to see, my instinct from an outsider would have been that he would look for Munster people. He would look for your Prendergast, he would look for your Leamies, these kind of guys. I don't think O'Gara's and the O'Connells are in that kind of space. But and then a lot of people think it'll be the opposite. He'll bring people,
foreigners in.
Yeah, right away in. So,
yeah, the backs coach is going to be, that's a big appointment. As you said, he's a prop. He doesn't, he obviously knows what he's talking about, but not down to fine details.
Yeah.
So, and this day and age in coaching staff, you need everyone working together. You have to have one guy calling
just,
on the
just transfer. What I said, I found that very interesting. When I spoke to Agar a few weeks ago, I asked him about the coaching job and how it works. He said, rugby, he said, is becoming a lot more like football and like soccer, right? It's not about going away and picking out the best backs coach, the best forwards coach. It's you pick a team of coaches based on what kind of style of rugby you want to play. So like the way Munster just went out and goes, okay, Roundtree, Fran Grant, Larkham, all probably class coaches in their individual right, but they're all thinking on different a different games. Level and they've all got different game plans. And none of those plans seem to work for Munster. And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. If you have one cohesive group of 3 to 4 guys who go, this is how we're playing, and they train and coach that way, it's going to make a difference.
Yeah. I think I'd be surprised if the new ticket didn't contain the likes of a Leamy, or like, just because I think that's just what my perception of Munster is, you know, that they'll want somebody.
Costello could get promoted possibly.
Yeah. Again, another example, just... I don't know what I know about Munster, except how to get beaten by them.
I do think that it should go along that. Obviously, Gerry Flannery or Felix Jones won't come back after them losing their contracts. But something like that, keep it home. But Munster in a good place at the moment, so hope it keeps going that way.
There's another signing for Munster as well. I don't know if you agree with this or not. Another centre is coming in, Antoine Fleish from Bristol. But this fella has an Irish granny, though, so he can actually play for Ireland. But same again, we're going out now bringing a centre in, even though we've got... like Alex McHenry and stuff, as you mentioned in the past, who are there, and even like you've got Fekitoa coming in next year as well. What's going to happen there now?
The land is gone. Fekitoa is coming in. This guy's coming in from Bristol.
Yeah,
he doesn't even start for Bristol.
No.
He's 25 years old. He's French, Irish qualified. I think he's also English qualified.
I think so.
I don't know. Obviously, Roundtree must know him. He must have a good CV. But
looks like a big lad, right?
Why do we need him? Like, I don't understand. Unless the Irish viewer going, we're going to bring this guy in and he's going to play for Ireland in the next couple of years. What's the point? Like, get rid of Alex.
Unless he's a superstar, like you can understand bringing in fellas like James Lowe, who are like, okay, this guy's going to play international rugby. That's why we're bringing him in.
Yeah. Do you ever feel sorry for Rory Scannell?
I don't want to say he's over 100 caps for Munster.
I just think he's a good player, and I'm always like, but he seems like he's, I don't know, he seems to never be enough for Munster. It has to be, you have to bring someone in, but
he's actually on the show next week. I won't be here next week, and I'm going to ask him. Rory Scannell's going to be here next week, so you can have and see what he thinks of it. Like, it'll be interesting to hear.
About all the centres and Munster keep signing? Because I remember I was delighted when Ulster signed Jarrod Bain.
We got to swim into full back, you were grand.
When Rory Scannell first broke into the senior squad, he was starting the whole time. He started European Cup games and all that. He's a
very, very good player.
He's class.
Very good
centre. He's unbelievable.
I get the impression that like he doesn't just suit the Munster way in that just size. I always have in my head that Munster had such success with like Halstead, you know, way back. That is how number 12 is played. It's not like, do you know what I mean? It doesn't really
crash ball.
Yeah, big midfielders. Yeah. Again, probably nonsense, but that's what the perception I always have.
Rory's very skillful. Yeah, he's a class player. Yeah. But I just don't get why we bring these guys in and you have fellas like Alex McHenry, Dan Goggin, Rory Scannell, all these guys sitting
Dan
there.
Dan Goggin, there's another guy. They
have to play. Like, they're Irish guys. They're young guys. Why are you signing this lad from Bristol? Like,
I don't know. And it's at the moment when you look at the centres, like Fekitoa, obviously we won't play international. Maybe the odd game with Tonga. Farrell is out of the Irish picture at the moment. Like, none of those centres are going to be away for Six Nations. We have all our centres for the Six Nations. Farrell might get called up, might not. But the way Hume's playing at the moment, he probably won't unless he really kicks in. So you have how many centres there? Like 5, 6 centres.
And you've Shane Daly can play there, Alex McHenry can play there.
Keith Earls can play there.
No, let's just sign another centre. Like, it's just silly. But at least he's Irish qualified, so it makes it kind of okay.
Yeah. So we had to finish that section up with giving all about Munster a small bit or so. We were all praised for him.
I was like, forget about that. Forget about them stuff in Ulster. Let's slag them off.
Yeah. We have to get a small bit in at the end.
No, we love Munster. Sure, we're talking about the homegrown talent there.
Exactly. Yeah. It's true. But we'll move on. Another one of the Irish provinces were in action. Poor old Leinster have finally been defeated.
Yeah, man.
Shock horror. 28-23. But over against the Sharks over in South Africa. So like, if it's only 2 games the South African sides have lost at home in the whole block. Like, what is it? Like 20 something games.
Wow.
Scandalous.
That's some stat.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Leinster team is questionable now. They've sent over a lot of young fellas. But I kind of looked at it again, and they have fellas like Reece Ruddock there, Porter was there, Kieran Frawley's played so many games for Leinster now. So it wasn't.
No such thing as a second Leinster team is pretty much a first team for anyone else.
What about Leinster sending the seconds? And you're like, hold on. Like, there's like 17 internationals.
These 50 caps.
Exactly. It's true, though. Like, I guarantee you, if we look back over the team, I bet you there's probably 13 or 14 internationals there. We call it the second team. Like,
yeah, no. There it was still a class team. Like, it's just, it's hard going down to South Africa and winning now.
Yeah.
And they played well. Like, they scored a nice couple of tries. What's his name on the wing? Tommy O'Brien had another great game.
Yeah, we actually have the Ilkats coming up in our try the week. The excellent try he scored.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
But he's been super the last 2 weeks.
You can understand why they've done it. Because, like, ultimately, like, they're going to finish top.
There's no
prize for finishing 14 points clear, 28 points clear. Like, do you know what I mean? You still get, and like, they're going to get that position. They have a huge number of players. And listen, they have a second game in South Africa, and then they have that game against Leicester. And Leinster are probably, I don't think Munster are capable in terms of depth of winning both trophies. I don't think they have enough players to go and win, like, you know, win a quarterfinal 1 week and then jump into the other. And, like, they just don't have enough players. I don't think they do that. Leinster do. So they're looking at this going, you know, they're probably looking, like, this year you need to win 8 knockout games to win both trophies. Like, it's 8 extra fixtures. It's huge amount of rugby.
A lot of cup rugby as well. Like, mentally.
So they're sitting back and they're going, right, they're now sort of forecasting. Now, 2 of those games are gone, but they're expecting to play 6 extra games. So to me, it's really come as no surprise. And, like, that team, you know, they got a losing bonus point. They nearly won. And, next week, some huge decisions went
against them. In fairness, like, you had that TMO decision at the end, like, where who was it? It was Alatoa was going in, and then one of the Sharks players dived in head first to stop him. Like, if they checked it on TMO, like, I mean, it was a try, like, it was a penalty try, if anything. Like, and then you had that incident of the Afeli Fassi offload, like, and he was clearly in touch when they went back and checked it. So they still,
that was some offload, though.
It was.
See that? He's falling into touch and he throws the ball out around his back. Like, he should have given it to him just for the skill alone.
He was in touch, but they got away with it. Like, but
And then there was also an intercept try. Mpipi scored an intercept try, so that's another 7 points just there. So, like, it might have been Leinster's second team, but they still played well. Like, and they, as you said, they could win next week, and they've so much rugby coming up. Like, so it's understandable why they're playing.
Colin got his way then as well. I found it funny there last week, and Colin came out and was like, they still hadn't decided what's going to happen with the finals, and he was like, well, if you finish top, then you should be getting a home final. Why should we have to travel to South Africa? And he got his way now because he knew they were going to finish first anyway. Who's going to beat Leinster in Dublin? Like, no matter what happens now, like, it's this kind of thing that annoys me, like, a little bit about the URC. I know on any given day, like, anyone can win, like, but no matter what final we get, it's more than likely going to be Leinster in the final at home. Who's going to beat them?
Yeah, but that's just because they're so good, man. Like, that's,
I know. I'm just saying. It's fair enough. It's unfortunate, like, that. I can't see past Leinster not winning it again, and it just takes the fun out of it a little bit, I suppose.
Yeah, and again, I think part of the disappointment from an Ulster point of view was that the only way I see Leinster not winning it is if you catch them on a bad day.
Yeah.
And probably the biggest chance you have of getting them on a bad day is if there's some kind of Champions Cup kind of fixture clash, you know, whereby there's a 6-day turnaround and they have a huge amount of unavailability, and they maybe have to, well, they're going to end up at home for most of the games, but they have to, say they have to travel, you know, and play in 6 days and something, or there's extra time, and then, you know, it's an anomaly like that will make them most vulnerable.
That's clutching at straws as well, like, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, listen, ultimately, if they, like, ask Connacht what it's like to go and play a knockout game in Dublin, like, it's, do you know what I mean? They're a serious outfit when they play well. And no doubt in this URC, they're going to be really, really tough to beat. If you'd asked me on Friday afternoon, I would have said Ulster are most likely to do it. But I was really impressed, as we just did the last part of the show, I was really impressed with Munster.
Yeah.
So I think that at the minute, if anybody's going to do it, it's probably them.
Team Munster to turn over Leinster.
Yeah, I think if anyone's going to do it, I feel like anyone, who's going to go to Dublin and win? I don't feel like the South African teams because of the travel. Yeah. So you're straight away, I don't see like an Edinburgh doing it.
What if you the Stormers went over there like fully loaded, like with all their Springboks?
Yeah, maybe.
There's a chance, like, isn't there? Like,
coming up here to play in the RDS or the Viva.
Probably not, like, but like I would give them more of a chance than I would give Munster a chance against Leinster and the Viva, based on what happened a couple of weeks ago.
Munster, like, you don't. You always give off about them and say that, like, good Van Graan's going and Roundtree's taking over. And was Van Graan even in Belfast at the game? Because, like, it looks like Roundtree's team.
I do think Munster, because of the history and the aggressiveness of Munster, that they could do it, but Leinster,
we've been given so many opportunities. We've had we had 2 semi-finals and a final against them the last few years up there, and we can never do it.
Do you know what, though,
it's too hard.
Class to have the South African teams in the league playing well. You look back a month ago, Munster went to South Africa and lost twice. Ulster have gone and lost twice.
Yep.
Leinster have gone and lost once. And it just really, like, the league just didn't have that before because, you know, there just wasn't enough good rugby. And now these are really, these teams, because they're so hard to beat, particularly over there, they're really kind of upset the apple cart a bit.
And you're
kind of,
as you say,
like, if the Stormers finish second, well, they're going to, like,
It bodes well for next season when you think about it, because this season, they kind of, it's their first season in the league, first of all. They're coming off the back of a Lions tour, so they didn't have a lot of their players. COVID, like, absolutely ran riot in South Africa, so they had loads of problems at the start with players being injured, no fans in the stadiums, and it's only now things are back to normal and they're smashing everyone.
Yeah,
so if you gave them a full season next year, and next year they can qualify for the Champions Cup based on where they finish, so they're going to be even more geared up. And they're going to, they're also, if you look at a lot of the recent signings at the moment, a lot of the big Springbok players are coming back re-signing for these four big franchises.
I think it'll be not a conversation for today, but just interesting what happens to them. It seems like they're actually just playing all year. Do you know what I mean? Because if you look at, like, if you're the likes of Mpimpi and you're playing, like, you'll play, I'm not sure who's touring South Africa this summer, but it'll be like Wales or England. So they'll play those games and then they'll go into the Rugby Championship, and then the Rugby Championship will finish and they'll go straight into the Pro 14.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, 2 years off though, in fairness.
It'll catch up with them eventually. You know, even if I think at the minute that when the derbies are on and around Christmas, they're getting a bit of time off, but that's not ideal. It's in the middle of a season.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. Conversation for another day. Let's not talk about global seasons.
No, but it is class to see Stormers and Sharks in top four to URC. Like, it just makes it so much more interesting.
Yeah.
And just hopefully see a semi final or something down there.
Exactly. Yeah. Moving on, Connacht. Actually, as we said, there's only two teams so far. Connacht are the second team so far to get a win down in South Africa. Mm-hmm. I know it's against the Lions, probably one of the weaker sides, but 33-30. Good to see Connacht. I don't think Connacht are in a position to get into the to win the URC against the knockouts, but they are playing for a Champions Cup spot at the end of the day.
Yeah, they're 10th at the moment in the table, which seems really low for them. Yeah, I thought they were doing better than that. Like, but it was a good game. Jack Carty played well, kicked well. Keane Prendergast had a stormer of a game. That lad is playing from six again. He's just playing unbelievably.
Glass of truth, that open show. Like, he's a good player. That's playing really good rugby this year.
Yeah, but he's moving well. His agility, his speed, his strength. He had a massive turnover in that game as well.
Yep.
Just another incredible back row just sitting around Ireland.
They're so hard to predict, Conall, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, they have produced this year some of the worst performances, like, I've seen from an Irish province in years, like, and then go into South Africa. You just never know what you're going to get from them. They just need a bit more consistency, don't they? Like, they shouldn't be, like, messing around, like, at 10th, 11th, 12th. And if you went through their season, I went, oh, how have you shipped?
I think it's because they don't have the depth. I think it's, that's why you see them. They're after signing, like, what have they signed? 5, 6, 7 players ahead of next year. They've got, like, 5 players coming from Leinster. They've got that guy coming from New Zealand. That's what Connacht lack. Connacht have a very good, like, core group of about 20 players. Past that, like, they don't have much, unfortunately. And that's what kills them throughout a long season. Like, we've been saying it since the very first time you came on the show, how, like, what... Would you just hate to be a Connacht fan? As you said, one week they're absolutely brilliant, the next week they're absolutely shocking. And that comes down to the depth.
It comes down to selection. Like, so saying, seeing them 10th in the league is really shocking. So I'm like, they've had some unbelievable games as well as really bad games. But I think it's because of who they're selecting. Like, the game in the weekend, they had Bundy in the centre, they had Tom Daly in the centre, they had Carty playing. So they had their top guys.
Bundy was actually played 13 as well in the weekend, wasn't he?
Yeah, so like, when they have their top team there, they could beat anyone really, like, but it's when they don't, they just get hockeyed, like, which is, as you said, hopefully getting signed now, those 5 or 6 lads coming in for next season.
Yep.
They might be a bit further up the table, but as you were saying before, and I don't think it's too bad them being 10th, they still can get into the European Cup somehow.
Yeah, they still get the Champions Cup because the South African teams can't qualify this year. So
it's not as bad for them. Like,
but Champions Cup rugby is a lot, like, you know.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and listen, just nice to see them getting a win down there. As we said, like, there's only the second team to get a win in South Africa in the URC, so it's not like ask Munster, ask Ulster, ask Leinster. It's not easy to do.
Nope.
First Irish team to do it.
Yes.
There you go, Colin.
Record for you guys.
And you know, there's something just... I like seeing them do well. I just think, like, Andy Friend in his interviews, he just comes across like a really good, nice, honest kind of bloke. And I think, like, I love the style of rugby they play. And, you know, I think we're past the kind of, we are past the times of, like, patronising Connacht. It would be good to see them do well.
No, they're a good side.
They're a good side and they should be higher in the league. And hopefully they can finish with a couple of wins and just sort of kick them up a little bit up in that table. Yeah. Because whilst, you know, 10th isn't great, there are actually a lot of good, you know, if you look at those 3 or 4 South African teams and 3 or 4, like, Irish strong teams before you even look at a Scottish team or, like, or the Welsh teams still in it, Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not always easy to get high up at that league, so it'd be good for them to finish with a couple of wins.
We haven't spoken about one Welsh team. That's so funny.
Yeah. But like I say, we're not allowed to speak about the Welsh teams, and either is Darren. Like, it's in the contract. So they don't like us. Yeah. No, yeah, a good win for Connacht. As I said, like, only one big incident in that game, you know, like, I mean, that's a little bit of something that Connacht need to look at, was like Bundiaki switching off for that try.
Yeah.
That kind of mentality is a little kind of something like that could have cost them. And he completely switches off, your man takes the ball off him while he's back instead of goals, and then quick try in the
yeah,
corner.
It is a funny one, but I can kind of see where Bundy's coming from. He's giving the ball back, and then your man runs away from Bundy.
Yeah.
If he tapped it and ran at him, then it would be a bad Monday morning for Bundy Akie. But I think, like.
Yeah, I think the only thing, I think with a guy like him who is just. There's probably not many centres that are like influence. Like a club's performance more than him. Do you know what I mean? I think when he plays for Connacht, like, listen, if Leinster missing Robbie Henshaw, it's a bit of a blow because he's a class player. Just as an example, you say the same about the likes of a Dale Andy at Munster, but see, Aki, he just seems to be such a like talisman for them. Mm. So from that point of view, I agree with you a little, Greg, it doesn't really impact anything.
Yeah.
I think from the other side of it is, well, this is the, he's the, like, he is the leader, he is the talisman of Connacht. So from that point of view, I don't think it looks great. Just as a role model, he is the benchmark. He's probably their best player. He's a huge personality where he gets on the field.
But what do you want him to do different? Just kind of turn his back and be set? Or,
yeah, I think
that's... Just be more switched on. That's all it is.
I hate it when lads do the kicking the ball away, throwing it away. I'm like, just leave the ball where it is, man.
But be switched on and always be ready for
it. Yeah, so it's
because like
goal,
when you're that close to the line, they've got a penalty. Be alert and be awake for it. Like at that level, it's professional rugby.
Because what you don't know is when you have a guy who's as influential as him, and playing devils a little bit, well, what was the impact of his body language on maybe the guy who was maybe, and listen, I don't know, we haven't got the clip and that, and it doesn't really matter, to be honest. It's just, I think for a guy like that, who's such an example setter, you know, probably I think he would probably regret that. But listen, it didn't cost him, and you know, it's not a huge talking point really.
Exactly. But all the Connacht lads say it about him, that he's so influential, his energy and stuff. So I would have loved to. Do you ever train with him or play with him? No.
No, I think he joined the Ireland squad just after I had been retired. I'd been stopped being selected. But I remember playing again, like I obviously played against him a good bit, and he's so loud and he's so energetic, and like he chats a lot, and he's like a bundle of
whooping and hollering.
Whooping and hollering, yeah. He's there's a lot to him, and I do think he brings a lot of kind of energy, particularly when he's playing for Connacht.
Yeah,
great stuff. We run up the rest of the weekend's results. The Stormers have been like absolutely ridiculously impressive since all these whole games. 32-7 against Glasgow, they're absolutely smashing everyone. Like, and you've got Resi Erasmus talking about their players and tweeting their praises and stuff.
He's a good player. Him, that I saw that tweet. I hadn't seen the game live, and I saw Erasmus tweet. He's actually a good follow on social media.
He's
mad.
One of the best people in the world follow on Twitter. Absolutely love following him.
But your man Roussi, obviously Ulster were over there. He played really well that day, and he scored that screamer a few weeks ago against the Ospreys.
Might have been.
He looks really good. It was a Welsh side, so you probably didn't watch it. Greg and I love our ruggers, so we would have been all over it like a sheep suit. But he's a great player. Reminds me of Pierre Spiess, like this huge big lad, but he gets an open space. So he's real exciting to watch.
Excellent. Rest of the games, Edinburgh just about beat Zebra at home, 29-26.
That's not great for Edinburgh. Only 3 points
at
home.
Not great at home. Bulls
it's a big
beat.
It's a big game, isn't it? Like, that's why you sell your TV subscriptions in that one. Like,
that's it. I
missed that one.
Edinburgh are a good team, man. They at home as well, they've been doing really well in the new stadium they have. For Zebra to come up and only beat them by 3 points.
Should they put 100 on Connacht, did they not?
They did actually, yeah.
But they scored 60, like, 60 against Connacht, did they not?
Weird. Beat Sharks away as well, yeah. So, they're the other second team to win in South Africa. They beat Sharks away a couple of weeks ago as well. Like, so, I mean, they'll be a tough opposition for Ulster in their away game.
Yeah, that's
their second last game. That's a game they need to win it.
And Edinburgh are there about seventh or eighth.
Yeah, they're up around the same.
So they're in it. They're probably sort of...
Edinburgh seventh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're right in the mix. And as I said, nobody wants to qualify in eighth because... You've got a double.
Good double, yeah. The Bulls are in eight at the moment.
Yeah. Bulls, yeah. So
they're only one point behind Edinburgh.
Benetton, 46-29. Good old pal of yours, Marcel Coetzee, scored again, and he's actually 12 tries this year. He's top scorer in the URC.
No way. Yeah, yeah. I did. That shocked me as well.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
That's as much. 12 tries for number 8, like.
I know.
Or 6, wherever he's playing.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a beast. He's
there
a
was
beast.
An absolute ridiculous red card in that game as well. Nicolò Cannone. It actually boxes him. It's actually a full force. It's like something from the Fury fight against Dillian White last night. It was probably one of the most deserving red cards you're going to see in a rugby pitch in a long time.
So he'd be banned for a while.
Don't like seeing that. And then you've got like Welsh teams playing. We call out the Welsh results. We might as well. Dragons lost 19-38 to the Scarlets. And Cardiff were beaten 22-6 by the Ospreys.
Good stuff.
Do you want to hear more about the Welsh teams? Do you want to go into detail? We don't have enough time, do we?
You take lead on that.
It's fine, we'll move on. Unfortunately, a bit of bad news in the women's rugby. Obviously, we're filming this on a Sunday, so we're only getting the result in just before the show. Ireland defeated 69-0 by England. Sounds really bad, but like it was only 10-0 at half time. They seemed to be in it.
Yeah, I watched the first half. Yeah, I watched the first half. We're coming in, and they were good, man. The girls were good.
Yeah,
they got a lot of turnovers against England. England would break through, and the girls would be straight on the ball. So we've obviously done a lot of work on that, but they just got dominated in the set piece, man. Their lineouts and scrums, and they're going up against a professional team. England women are fully professional, so that's why that's obviously where the discrepancy coming from. Like they just haven't done as much time.
10 tries with lineouts and scrums. Like, it's awful. Like I mean, I just say, as you said, we've had this conversation to start. We won't go into too much detail. It's something when we have Lindsay and stuff back on, we might discuss with her. Like,
but yeah.
It just seems to be like, and it's not. This isn't just Ireland. Every single game England have played so far, they're winning by 40, 50, 60, 70 points.
Mm.
And it's like you're putting four like amateur teams up against a super professional team. It's just not a competition anymore. It's not.
Yeah, they are the best in the world. Like, do you know what I mean?
And Ireland. But like, you're being the best in the world. Like, I mean, like South Africa are the best team in the world. Like, are they going to go out and beat Ireland by 70 points in the men's? Yeah. Same with New Zealand. Like, they'll lose. But like, it's literally like the gap is so big.
It is so big. It's when you have like different levels of professionalism within the same tournament. That is just tough, isn't it?
It's not fair.
And obviously we don't have Lindsay here, but like I think she'd have a massive say.
She'd have a lot.
It has to do with the professional side of it. Like, it's like putting an L team up against
Munster.
Let's
put like, Shannon against Munster like the weekend and see how they get on. Like,
you know
what I mean?
And the girls played well in the first half, keeping 10-0. So I think they should look at that positive and then just don't worry about the 10 tries in the second half.
Good stuff. Before we move on to some rugby news, Darren, I believe you were up in Enniskillen recently.
Yes, I had a lovely little trip up there. Big thank you to our sponsors, Bank of Ireland, for having me up. And I ended up getting involved in training. It was the first time I'd had the boots on since I retired.
Looking forward to this.
They were a wee bit, the leather was a wee bit, you know, I thought they were going to break in two, like they were a bit crusty. But I got going in the end.
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing this.
Today, I'm at Enniskillen Rugby Club to talk to the president, Freddie Fraser. The club is 97 years old this year, and they've had loads of success, and I'm about to hear all about it. Freddie, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me down in Enniskillen Rugby Club. The club's had some success over the last few years with trophies.
Yes, over the last couple of years, we've won the Towns Cup. That's played by towns, not cities. So it's like Port of Downs and whatever. The Junior Cup is a cup that we've won 2 years ago, and it's played by all in Ulster.
So you're clearly a club then that never stops competing. Why do the trophies matter?
Well, we hadn't won a trophy for about 82 years, and it was just great to have a silver cup in your hand after the 82 years. My proudest moment was probably winning the two cups. They're both days, it was an incredible day out. We had buses coming from Enniskillen to the Kingspan, and we came back here, and it was probably a late night or more like an early morning.
That's team success, individuals. Everyone's talking about Robert Ballacoon at the minute, but there's been plenty of Irish internationals that have come through Enniskillen Rugby Club.
Yeah, well, over the last few years, we've had Robert Ballacoon, who's playing for Ireland. And also in the ladies' end, we've had Cathy Dane, Claire Bowles, and we have three or four other girls that's training with Ireland. But not only that, we've had Jimmy McCoy back in the 80s, who played for Ireland.
Can you tell us a bit about the Friday Club?
Well, the Friday Club was probably started up about 10 years ago, and we've about 9 or 10 members. It's if we come here on a Friday morning, we fix doors, we fix locks, we clean the place up, we do things on the pitches. It's a great, like a family. There have been guys that I've played rugby with over the years, and we still come here on a Friday morning. We end up with a cup of coffee and a slice of apple tart.
For the people watching at home that don't know a lot about Enniskillen and Enniskillen Rugby Club, can you tell us a bit about the ethos and the community around the club?
Well, we're the only rugby club within Fermanagh. It's a very, very social club. they would see the teams on a Saturday evening here, maybe staying here for an hour or two, and going back into Enniskillen as a family, near enough, and everybody looks out for each other.
That looked like great act, Aaron. So you enjoyed that, did you?
Yeah, it was, you know what, it was a freezing, proper rugby, like, it wasn't like playing in the pros when you're
old school.
Like, proper rugby, like Tuesday night freezing, yeah. Soaking, everyone's buzzing, just finished work, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Nah, but fair play to them. They're, like, as he said, they're the only club in the whole county of Fermanagh, so it's hard for them to get fixtures. They've a long way to go, but the place was heaving. Women's rugby, they've the two schools down there, really strong, and there was loads of, like, there was two or three girls teams up training, the men seniors, and yeah, I got involved and had a wee bit of a waddle around.
Brilliant. Yeah,
great. So, yeah, stuff. They're right to say, no, yeah,
they're probably delighted to have Mr. Darren Cave down.
You're, well, they didn't know who it was, but do you know what I mean?
Were you coaching?
So, I did a wee bit. I kind of was like, it was one of those ones where I was like, oh, I can't really be bothered. And then you can't help but get involved.
Of course, you know?
I wouldn't natural. Like the pressure of, like, leading training and setting the cones out and this is the drill, but I don't mind if it's someone else's drill and, like, sort of jump in, yeah. And listen, actually, I find that if, you know, when you're doing this, I do that and see if that helps, you know.
Consultancy role.
Yeah, that's kind of, I'm more DOR material for anyone who's, so, like, Munster, you know, probably wouldn't work unless Roundtree was looking for someone to bounce a few ideas off.
Did you get the itch for going back?
Yeah,
no. But they love signing centres, like, so they probably put you in the centre, like, because it's not like to have enough centres as it is, like, you know. So Munster might take you on, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
DOR /backup centre.
I can do backup centre. Like, I did that the last couple of years of my career.
No, not even a little itch to play again.
Nah, none at all. I've been asked to play in a couple of, like, the Legendsy games and the Bermudas and Classics and stuff, and I'm just not at
don't have the graph for it anymore.
Not yet. Maybe, I don't know, in a couple of years I might. I love watching rugby. It's a very rough game. You know what I mean?
Like, you see, you're a professional rugby player for this, like,
for Ireland International, 200-something caps Ulster, and he just said, it's a really 50. Rough game.
Clip that.
They're big men. It's rough. It's sore.
And you were a centre. Oh,
you know how many times I got my toes stood on a cold Tuesday morning in the kicks, man? Like, these toenails are butchered.
And they say all rugby players are, like, super tough. This is a professional, international rugby player.
You know what's the best thing to do? Media, and just go on and be like, it's crap. It's brilliant. And actually have no real solutions and that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not stress about it. Just forget about it. Turn it off. It's over.
Just talk shit about rugby on the telly, basically. Like.
Exactly.
Yeah. Funny enough, I got my first itch to go back playing the other day. So I was watching the boys playing the Singapore Sevens. And they did shout out to the men sevens who beat Fiji, nearly beat New Zealand, finished fourth in Singapore Sevens. Unbelievable. Oh, did well in Vancouver as well. I was watching. I was like, geez, I wouldn't mind going back playing now. But then yesterday I went to the 1B AIL semi-final, Wesley versus Nace, and a ruck happened in front of me as I stand on the side of the pitch, and I was like, jeez, I'm glad I'm not
you were there looking a million there bucks and your skinnies and your nice trainers imagine getting mud on these, like,
man, like, AIL is so attritional, man, like, god, like, such respect for those guys. And Shannon won their semi-final, into the final now, hopefully they'll go up into 1A.
Come on Shannon Bryce. Moving on to news. Well, obviously, we'll start off with a bit of bad news. I don't know if we're going to dampen her. Pedri Wannenberg passed away in tragic circumstances. You played with Pedri. I know he was with the Bulls, but he was at Ulster for two seasons, Darren?
Yeah, I think he was there from about 2011, 2013-ish. And yeah, just, like, shocking news, you know. Even, like, it's hard. Just so comes out of absolutely nowhere. And I think, you know, being a parent now myself, you know, I can't help, you know, think of his wife currently, Yvette, who's obviously there from South Africa. So he left Ulster and went to Cass and then Oena, and then he was coaching and playing in America. So they're kind of quite isolated there in Texas. Mm. And his son, Francois, I believe, still in hospital. So I just, like, it's just absolutely, it's absolutely gotten. I can't, I'm not sure. It's a hard thing to kind of react to, you know, because it's so personal.
Of course, Just tell us a bit about him as a player, what he was like as a teammate.
The one thing as a player that I would have associated with him is durability. He was the ultimate, like, there's a couple of stats, if you look him up, of, like, consecutive games. He has some record. I think he played, like, 99 Super Rugby games in a row, but without getting injured. I remember
rugby of all sports, and as well, like, to do that in rugby.
And I think, again, I haven't done my research because I'm not a good professional, but I think he was at Ulster for two seasons,
yeah.
And a very easy stat to find out how many caps he had. If I was professional, I would have done it before I'd come on, but I'd say he has at least sort of 55, between 55 and 60 caps for Ulster. Like, he played, you know, pretty much every week for two seasons solid, yeah. So he was very, very durable. And I think as well, I remember...
He has 54 caps for Ulster.
54 in 2 years, 54. So not a bad effort.
And he scored 9 tries as well. Like.
Yeah, and I think I remember he played in the European Cup final, the year we got the European Cup final. And again, I remember him telling me it was like his 12th domestic final he'd ever played in. But he'd won all 11 before because he played for that Bulls team that was like Victor Matfield, Guthrie Steenkamp.
Oh, believe the team. Dupree. I remember them, yeah.
Probably Mornay Steen back then, but it was like an absolute worldly dream team.
2007 World Cup kind of team, basically. Like.
Yeah, so just, do you know what? Like, just on a personal, I think, I just can't believe. Literally, my heart just goes out to his family so much. It's so sad. It's
very sad.
And... yeah, it's hard to know what to say about it other than that. Like, I know everyone at Ulster and everyone in Ireland will be sending sort of all their thoughts and love and prayers to Yvette and all of Annenberg's.
Without a doubt. Old Nugget announced his retirement during the week. Sean Cronin,
yeah. Good Shannon man as well.
Shannon's finest.
Yeah, my dad would be upset now. One of my father's favourite players, Sean Cronin. What an incredible Irish player.
What an athlete, lads.
Unbelievable.
What an athlete. Like.
He's too fast.
Do you know what I mean? There will never be a hooker. Like, maybe the key would, but what, he's the only person I can think of that could step, run and tackle
kick
at speed.
Well.
Like him. He can kick as well.
He had a wee left peg, didn't he?
He did. We left peg. He kicked a few weeks ago down the touchline. Yeah.
Our skullman as well. Forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
Got to get that in there.
So I think I could be wrong now again with our stats. I think he's the most capped Irish player off the bench ever.
Something like that.
I believe he. I think I might have been in camp when he overtook guys to be on that, and yeah, he was real dirty about it. Like,
he was, you know, yeah.
He hated it. Yeah. Like, but listen, what a he's a class player, lovely, lovely guy. And yeah, it's funny, you know, when the likes of him, Devon Toner, and when it comes Johnny Sexton, it is unbelievable when you see the list of stuff they won. Like, you do take it for granted a little bit. And I think, like, I played for 13 years and I never won anything. Hardly won a match. No, but like, genuinely, like, Ulster haven't won a trophy since 2006. Munster, I think it's 2008-ish. These guys are retiring. Like, Devon's was even worse. But these guys are going, like, 4 Champions Cups, 1 Challenge Cup, 6 league titles, 7. Like, it's unbelievable how successful. Before you get involved in his Grand Slams and his Six Nations medals. These are phenomenally successful rugby players. Mm.
Yeah.
I like his perseverance, because I remember when he was coming out of Ard Skull, like, he was like, obviously, this guy's going to be a superstar, this guy's been international, he's going to be really top hooker for Munster. But he was there around the time when Fla was there, so he wasn't getting an opportunity. He went off to, it was just Connacht, he went off to first, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He went to Connacht, had a few seasons at Connacht, then he got picked up by Leinster, and he carved himself out an incredible career, like trophies, what, the 60 something caps for Ireland after being rejected by Munster originally. Like,
72 caps.
He was on my caps. I played Irish schools with him, and then in Ireland under 19s, he, like, I think he made a balls of his leaving cert and had to repeat his cert and, like, didn't play rugby for a year. Do you know, because I remember he went from schools to 19s and he was MIA, and then Ireland 21s the next year. And Niall O'Shea was like, this guy, like, you know, he's our captain, like, get him in there, Shannon.
Yeah.
And he came back from nowhere. And as you say, yeah, went to Connacht. And yeah, he ended up winning every, ironic, like, he never actually played for Munster, given he's a Limerick man.
It's funny, it's funny.
What a career.
It is, he's an unbelievable career. Yeah. Contract news, good old Robbie Henshaw has signed on until 2025. It's good to see, because I'm sure someone like Robbie Henshaw, especially considering the fact that he's been out of the Ireland team for the last couple of games, sort of Six Nations with Aki and Ringrose, like, I'm sure he got a few offers coming from England and France. I'm sure there's plenty of guys that would have no issue giving Robbie Henshaw a million a season to come over and play.
I'd also say his nice central contract there isn't too bad.
I'd say it's not too bad, but
he probably just about has enough to pay the bills.
Yeah.
All of the houses and housing in Dublin, actually, he probably doesn't. He probably still lives at home in that loan.
That's class for Ireland to sign him down until 2025. But he's still young. What is he?
He's only 26, 27.
He's playing well.
Yeah.
I thought he looked really sharp in the Aviva there. Yeah. Like, he's such a quality, such a rounded player, because he's big, his skills, real sharp pass.
He's our best centre by a bit. Like, I think the way the Six Nations worked out this year is he wasn't quite fully fit, and then Ringrose was so good in that first game that they couldn't drop him, and they just didn't really get back into it. So it was kind of more just the way things worked out. But if you're picking your starting best Ireland team tomorrow, Robbie Henshaw starting at 12 or 13, doesn't matter. Yes, yeah, start one of those positions.
He's incredible. Yeah,
I think it's good from an Irish point of view as well that, like, players like him are just re-signing. and you're not, there's not a rigmarole, and there's not a, you know, a lot of, and you never really hear a lot of Ireland's best players are just renewing contracts. And it's nice because you don't want, ultimately, you don't want players going to Racing for big dough and then not featuring, and, you know, do the, and then they're having conversations about changing eligibility rules. And so it's nice to see Ireland's best players just renewing.
Yeah, we haven't lost a player in a while, in fairness, have we?
But imagine how happy Robbie Henshaw is. Like, he's living in his home country. I think he has a girlfriend. Like, he's playing Leinster, the best team in Europe. Playing for Ireland, like, why would you leave? Like, central contract.
So,
like,
some people, you know, might want to experience something different. Like, or like, some of those French clubs can offer absolutely scandalous money. Like, so there's always that threat. But as you said, it's good to see him.
And good to see the loyalty. Yeah, 100%.
I've been meaning to rant about this all week now. You know, I love a good rant and giving all about Munster. And I don't know who made the decision making here or who's responsible, whether it's the IRFU, whether it's Munster, whether it's people up top down below.
But somebody's about to get it.
Someone's about to get it. Lads, what in the name of God is going on? How did, who figured this out and how did this happen? Munster, off the back of beating Exeter, as we said, super performance. They've now got a quarter final against Toulouse. Should be at home after how they did so well in pool stages. But no, they can't play the match at Thomond Park because Ed Sheeran's got a gig there, right? Excuse my language. The quarterfinals are always on around that same time.
Yeah, it's an absolute F up by the logistics team. I don't know when someone sat down and saw that and goes, ah, sure, look, we'll just play Ed. I presume it's a money thing. To get the money into...
I know they're broke, like, and they're like still owe the IRFU like about 10 million for Thomond Park. And then all the money they've lost out in the last couple of years from number one, COVID, and two, the fact that they're shit and no one wants to go to their matches anymore. Sorry about that, lads. But you know what I mean?
But even the money... I was at Ed Sheeran last night as well. Lads, wasn't that good? Sorry, Ed, if you're listening to the podcast. It wasn't that good. Because his songs are very like slow. And I know I shouldn't get into it, but like, look, Munster match will be on in Thomond Park.
But if we're playing... So if you're telling me like right in a couple of weeks' time, or I think it's the 8th of May is the match. If we're like Toulouse, like you saw how good Toulouse are against Ulster. They're the champions, right? They've got bloody half their team are Grand Slam winners. If Toulouse came to Thomond Park, even the way Munster are playing at the moment, they're up and down, I'd give them a chance every day of the week.
It's such a fortress, man, Thomond Park.
Like, not imagine, leave it all. I wasn't
traveling down to play in Thomond Park. Horrible, is it?
Yeah. I mean, I have mixed experiences. Actually, probably my lowest and highest point for Ulster could have both been at Thomond Park playing in, obviously we won the knockout game there in 2012, which was just phenomenal in the European Cup. And then I think it was my last season. We were humiliated. I shipped about 60 something points. I broke my thumb and I was honestly, I remember on the bus on the way home just thinking, I'm done. Yeah. So it's a tough, listen, I have more, Toulouse are there to be taken. And I definitely think a sold-out Thomond Park, I would have had Munster at relatively strong, definitely favourites. I would have had Munster definitely favourites.
At home in Thomond Park.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I do think the Aviva will be a much nicer place to go. For Munster, the fans...
Much nicer place for Toulouse to go.
Yeah, so from an away team, they'll be delighted about it.
Nice big wide pitch then as well up in the Aviva as well, like to suit them down to the ground.
I hope that the Munster fans just really, really, really buy into it and they go for it. And I hope, like, obviously it's not the easiest time to fork out hundreds of euros to get up to Dublin to watch a game, but I would love to see Munster say, do you know what? It's not ideal, but we're going to fill this place.
The only good thing you'd say there, and in fairness, like, and you probably know a lot of people, sure, you're living in Dublin, you're from the right, there is a lot of Munster people living in Dublin.
Yeah.
So, like, there is still could just probably 15, 20,000 Munster fans, if not more, living in Dublin.
If that place is filled with, you know, if that place is 50,000 Munster fans in it, like, it is not going to be an easy place to go. So I hope that that's what happens.
It's still not Thomond Park, though. I remember I went to Munster versus Saracens in the semi-final of the European Cup a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was at
in the
well,
Aviva
yeah.
Stadium. Yeah. It just wasn't the same. Like, everyone travelled up, all the Munster supporters travelled up. It just wasn't the same. But look, might be different.
Were you at
the
Exeter game a couple of weeks ago in Thomond Park?
I wasn't at it, no.
I was at that, lads. I mean, like, it's been a while now, so I've been to a match like not working. I was on the piss out with the lads inside in the stadium. The atmosphere was incredible. Everyone was jumping and dancing. We were in the car at the Shannon Bar afterwards and we met Jack Noel and Sam Simmons and we were like, they were doing lineup moves and stuff. And he was saying after the game, like, I've never been anywhere like this. Like, they're such good crackdown. They're all nuts. And like that, like the whole of Limerick kind of lights up and gets that little bit of buzz.
Yeah.
And it's what has got Munster over the line so many times is that Thomond Park, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and you're taking that away now because
there's no point dwelling on it now because Ed Sheeran's coming in, so we better play a good gig in Thomond Park.
It's better be good. That's like, Greg, Ed won't be happy when he's listening to this podcast on Tuesday morning. He hears Greg give his concert shit.
we'll finish up with a quick look at the URC trophy, and we'll let you comment on that, guys. Me personally, I hated it at the start, but then I was like, okay, I'm not too annoyed because of the fact that the top actually comes off and you can fill it with booze and drink from it. So that's good.
The top comes off, like a Hoover. And then you can put your USB lead in and you can charge your phone. And also you can lose it, you can use it if you take the top off to light a cigarette as well.
What do you think? I mean, I think it looks like a Dyson. I love that. What do you think?
A Dyson. Oh, shout out to my brand partner, Dyson. The thing with that is, I love that they thought about, oh, someone's going to want to pour drink in this, we better design it.
They actually asked. So I remember having this conversation with producer Pat a couple of weeks ago. I was like, when the new trophy comes in, remember the old Pro 40 trophy? You can't drink out of it. I was like, what is the point in winning a trophy in rugby when you can't drink out of it?
That was what I said when I was playing. But it's actually, I didn't bother.
It's actually in the press release that they did their research, and they asked all the coaches and players. And one of the things that was came back to them was, we need to be able to drink out of it. The coaches and players actually said that to them.
Really?
So they listened. Like, and it's true. Like, imagine winning a cup and not being able to fill it up with beer. Like, it's the whole thing. It's
why
the
you? Why you train to drink out of a trophy?
To drink out of a trophy full of beer at the end of the season. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well,
that's why you play rugby.
Yeah, look, at least none of us will have to lift it.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. So that's us.
Yeah, that's us, guys.
All right, that was great crack, lads. Being back, Darren, lovely to have you in.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm back next week as well. I'm so excited.
Placing me, I'm going to be sunning it up in Spain at a lovely wedding. So I'll be enjoying myself. I will.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully, you won't be pasty white when I come back.
I will be. So that's all right for the one of us.
We look forward to that. And of course, I have to say a big thank you to our partners, Bank of Ireland, proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. We'll see you next week, guys.
Joe presents House of Rugby. United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.